Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. In her one-woman show, Forever, Pulitzer Prize finalist Dale Orlandersmith travels to the famed Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, where, by the graves of legendary artists such as Marcel Proust, Oscar Wilde, and Jim Morrison, she finds unexpected grace in a gripping tale of the legacy a daughter inherits from her mother. Forever opens tonight on Weston Playhouse's other stages in Weston, Vermont, directed by Steve Stettler, and Dale Orlandersmith joins us now. Dale, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me. I'm pleased, very pleased to be part of it.
So before we speak specifically about what brings you to Weston, can you tell me when you began writing and creating theater? What was your first experience wanting to make this your life?
I began to write theater when I was in my teens, when I was about 15 years old. And it's something I've always wanted to do. I remember like seeing Brando. The first thing I saw Brando do was Orpheus Descending, mm-hmm. you know, which was a movie, actually, that Sidney Lumet directed called The Fugitive Kind. And when I saw that, that was pivotal. And the first play I ever saw, actually, was James Earl Jones. I saw him do The Great White Hope. And the nuns had no idea what they were taking us to see. So I was like, okay. You know, so those were the two things that were pivotal.
And how did seeing them turn into creating theater for you?
It was just a bug. I mean, I said, how do you do this? How did they do this? How did they make this thing so immediate? I mean, that wasn't the language that was, you know, within my mind's eye, but that was, which, you know, it hit my bones that way. That's the only way. It was very visceral. It was very electric, you know? So that's how I came about doing it. I said, how do I do this? So I began to look into it. I began to look into acting schools, and there was a teacher in school that, you know, suggested to my mother that I go to acting classes. And then through by the time I was in high school, I began to like do some theater on the Lower East Side, and I began to actually write my own stuff, you know, back then, you know, a little bit, and then fully more so into writing when I got into my mid-20s.
The first stuff that you wrote, are there seeds, are there glimpses into those first attempts that still relate to what you create now?
Yes. Some of the stuff is, like I remember some years ago when I was in my 20s, I began to write, you know, the beginnings of a play I had called Yellow Man. That was mm-hmm. the one I was a finalist for the Pulitzer for.
Yes.
And I remember a teacher saying to me, because I was in an acting class reading some of it, and he said, well, if you read this to someone, you're going to probably scare away agents and all of that kind of stuff. Because I've had to kind of take an unconventional trip, an unconventional way in terms of dealing with you know, writing my work, because I'm somebody who a lot of people don't know how to sell. So I've had to kind of follow my own instinct. And had I listened to a lot of the people that told me not to do stuff, I wouldn't have what I have.
Where does the security to not listen to those people come from?
You know, I'm really just as of late, and, you know, my next birthday I'll be 57, you know, really as of late, like really in my skin at this point. I mean, I'm not saying that I wasn't afraid, because I was. But again, I just had to do it on my own. I don't know where it comes from. I do know that I have to believe in what I'm doing because, you know, like many people, I've made a lot of sacrifices for what I've done, you know. So for me to come this far and not do it or, you know, not do it the way I want to do it. See, I come across many people also who, again, who have wonderful careers. And I'm very much so big fish, small pond. I'm the first one to tell anybody that there's a lot of people who do not know what my work is. There are people who do, and there's some who think they do because the name sounds so pretentious, you know. But I've also come across people who are doing a lot of theater and they hate what they do because they're doing it for a dollar. They're doing it because, oh, this is commercial and I have to do this. I don't believe in this play, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I couldn't live that way. I couldn't live with myself that way. I'm not in love with poverty. There is nothing romantic about poverty whatsoever. But having said that, I wouldn't want to do something that I really don't care about just for the sake of a dollar. And I come across many people who've had to do that. So I guess looking at them as an example of what not to do, and that's always been within me as well.
When you have an idea for a story, an idea for a piece, a play, something you want to write and develop, How do those ideas latch into you? How do you know what you will see to completion?
I never lack ideas. What I do is lack the space a lot of the times to write. You know, that's why, you know, Vermont is so cool, because as we speak, and I'm working on a piece now, and also music helps, and also painting helps, you know, because I'm a frustrated rock and roll fan, right? I mean, mm-hmm. a rock and roll musician, rather. You know, so I'm always thinking in terms of music, and I'm always thinking in terms of painting. I wish I could paint, and I try to write and paint, write like a painter and a musician.
Do you actually paint at all?
I wish, but but painting is always, you know, within my mind's eye. And, you know, and music is also always in my head. You know, it's always, I mean, you know, sometimes, like, I'm lucky enough where I can say to certain directors, you know, this riff sounds like, you know, Kurt Cobain meets Picasso, and they'll know exactly what I mean.
Is the thing you're working on writing now, not the thing you're performing that we will talk about momentarily, but the thing you're writing now, Until the Flood, the new commission from Repertory Theater of St. Louis?
No, that's done.
Oh, okay.
That's already done. I've got a couple of things. I've got a lot of things going on. I'm blessed to have a lot of work happening, which is great. No, this is, ironically enough, this is a commission for the New York Children's Theater, an adaptation of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's being written for 6 to 13-year-olds.
Have you written for children before?
Yes. I did a thing for young adults. It's a thing called Some of the Things Inside. Mm-hmm. This is the second time, but never for like 6-year-olds or where it has. There's a major difference between a 6-year-old and a 13-year-old. So we're going to see how this goes. But yeah, it's interesting.
The production you've brought to Weston's other stages is Forever. Could mm-hmm. you set us up with what we should know about that?
It's a memoir piece. It's about how my mother unconsciously introduced me to art, and it takes place in Père Lachaise Cemetery, which is a very famous place, famous cemetery in Paris, where people like Jim Morrison, Richard Wright, Piaf, Chopin are buried, and it starts and ends at Jim Morrison's grave.
What brings Forever to Weston? Why are you there this summer?
Well, Steve saw it and he loved it, and also, you know, Weston has been a very, very great community to me. I've been here before. I've written, you know, Seeds of Things before, and then also a couple of years ago I did a solo piece here called Stoop Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just been super supportive, and of course I wanted to come, and it's a beautiful place to be.
You have performed Forever before, but at Weston, Steve is directing you. How does it feel different to do your piece with a different director than you've worked with on before?
Well, you know, it's funny because different directors will choose different things to emphasize. Well, and also what Steve has done is still be respectful of what's been done, but he's not trying to duplicate what's been done. And there are certain things that, you know, I thought that have fallen to the wayside because I haven't done it. And he's looking at different aspects of stuff within the piece that, say, the other director didn't. It's neither good nor bad, it's just different. But having said that, it's also been a really rewarding experience, and he gives you a lot of room to work and do what you got to do. So he's not trying to duplicate what he saw, but he's also being respectful of what's there.
What do you, as a writer and performer, get to explore in this piece that you haven't tackled before in your other work?
Every piece is different. I love the fact that it's a memoir piece, you know, because, again, it's not just simply about, you know, confessional. Confessional in and of itself does not interest me. I mean, most people have an interesting life. It doesn't mean that it's a piece of theater.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you know, I get to look at a universalism within the piece, you know, talking about Piaf, talking about Jim Morrison, talking about rock and roll in a way I've never gotten a chance to talk about rock and roll before. Looking at the relationship between a mother and a daughter, looking at the complexities of the, you know, parent-child relationship, humanizing both of them but not necessarily liking them. We don't have to like, but we have to understand.
Do you mind telling me more about what rock and roll means to you?
Rock and roll is almost like a religion to me. You know, because it's funny. It's like I was mentioning Jim Morrison, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Morrison, I mean, The Doors, particularly the first album. I was a little kid when I heard Light My Fire, but the first, and I say this in the piece, you know, the first version I heard of Light My Fire was Jose Feliciano. And then he's a Puerto Rican folk singer. And then when I heard the actual original version, and then I sat down and I began to read, like, you know, just some of the lyrics and stuff, I said, oh my gosh, who is this? You know, and that led me to, you know, a certain kind of rock and roll could do, and there was a freedom within it that was just incredible. And it, you know, it led me, in terms of the literary, it led me to the French canon, like Rimbaud, Baudelaire, Comte d'Entremont. And it also, it was just something incredibly mysterious about about it. And then, you know, when I began to really explore it more so and get headlong into it, I saw exactly how sexy and freeing it was. There was no constraint, and that's what I loved about it and still love about it.
Were any of your friends listening to The Doors when you were listening to The Doors?
No. It wasn't until like, say, I got into high school and then I began to hang in the East Village and in clubs and stuff like that, that, you know, I met my fellow freaks, you know. but no, I wasn't. I was a very odd child. You know, as a little kid, I was, you know, like 10, 11, I was very odd, and I was looking for my niche, and I didn't find it really until I was like 12. From like 13 on, I began to really hang in the East Village by then. And then I began to find, you know, my fellow outcasts.
And you keep finding them wherever you go now.
You know, it's funny. Outcasts, yeah. I mean, I think people will tell me, they come up to me, you know, and they say, I felt the way you did when I was a kid, or I feel the way you do now. I mean, people, especially with this particular piece, it really invokes and provokes a lot of stuff. That's the only way to put that for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's interesting. Some of it is hysterically funny. Some of it is heartbreaking, a mixture of both.
Dale Orlander-Smith will perform Forever July 14th through the 31st at Westin's Other Stages, directed by Steve Stettler. Thank you very much for your time. Have a wonderful experience in Vermont, and I thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you. You have a great one.
Dale Orlander-Smith's Forever opens tonight at Westin Playhouse's Other Stages in Westin, Vermont. For more information, visit westonplayhouse.org. That link is posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.